flexibility, convenience, opportunity. Find your digital advantage in the Keeneland Digital Sales Ring. Backed by the most trusted name in thoroughbred sales, visit KeenelandDigital.com to learn more.
Good morning. It is 9:41 Wednesday, November 3rd. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland, the third annual Breeders' Cup Preview Edition. Welcome, welcome, one and all. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. I guess congratulations to the Atlanta, not the Red Sox, for winning the World Series last night.
Oh, well, actually, I feel a little bad for Mattress Mack. Everybody loves to hate the Astros, but I would love to see him win that bet. Hi, I'm Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. Gratuitous plug, my radio show that I do with Dave Johnson on SiriusXM on Saturday is moving to Channel 85. Find us on Channel 85 on Saturday for Down the Stretch.
Guys, I'm so excited for the third annual Breeders' Cup show. I can't believe this is our third one. And this lines up to be even more exciting than the other two. I am so excited that my nurples are purple.
More or less purple than your shirt?
This is maroon. This is maroon. It's less purple than Bill's shirt, but more purple than my shirt.
I'm the only one without Breeders' Cup purple. Whoops.
I know. And actually, I appreciate the thread of blue hat, but he never ran in the Breeders' Cup.
I know. You got to send me a coinage hat. I don't know what's taking you so long.
I don't have them yet. I don't even have them. The Breeders' Cup makes them up.
Okay.
With the official insignia and emblem and then we do the official Breeders' Cup chop.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Take part in the Keeneland November Experience from November 10th to November 19th. It's right around the corner. You can learn more at november.keeneland.com. All right, so 14 races for Breeders' Cup 38. They should go back to using the Roman numerals. Everything is cooler with Roman numerals. Breeders' Cup XXXVII. It's a great, obviously a great 2 days of racing. We've been looking forward to it for a really long time. There's 14 races. We're not going to do too much preamble here because we want to get through all of them without everybody's eyes eventually glazing over. So we're going to start with the juvenile turf sprint, which is 5 furlongs on the Del Mar turf for 2-year-olds. Last year, obviously Golden Pal won it. Field of 12 with 4 also eligibles. I'm going to toss it to John to get us started.
Thanks, Joe. And the interesting thing about this Breeders' Cup, before we get into the specific race, is really just how worldwide this is. There are 46 international entries, including 7 Japanese entries, which, you know, I think back when John Gaines had a vision of doing the Breeders' Cup, this is exactly what he thought of, including the Roman numerals, because he was really big into Roman numerals. I don't know if very few people know that, but he anticipated that, you know, if you build it, they will come. And finally, after 3 decades of really great racing, people are coming. They are coming in droves. And like I said, you know, almost 50 international entries, and it's just great to see. It truly is a world championship. And so much so that 9 of the 12 starters in this race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf actually started races outside of the continental United States. So there are horses that are coming in from Canada and France and Ireland and England. And, you know, it's just, again, it's a world championship. So I'm very excited about that and to start off with this race. So the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint is the only grade 2 of all the Breeders' Cup races. And I firmly believe that as this, you know, continues to evolve, that this will also get to be a grade 1 because, you know, it'll earn that kind of status. Interestingly enough, 4 of the horses in this race, guys, have never made a left turn on a racetrack. Never made a left turn. So a lot of them are straightaways. A lot of them are going clockwise instead of counterclockwise. So there's always, you know, with young horses, there's always that concern about, hey, can they actually make the left-hand turn? That being said, in going through the races or going through the entries of the race, I came up with a couple of them of interest. Number one is, you know, the one horse, Twilight Jet, who has only run straightaways, 10 starts for a 2-year-old, which is really unusual. That's right up Bill Finley's alley of, you know, when they're done running, run them again, because that's the best way to continue to make money. You have Coffee Maker, who's a filly, Jimmy Creed filly, who has run against the boys her last 3 starts. And, you know, that's a Wesley Ward filly. She gets really hot in the pre-race. So that's something to watch is just what her temperament is. If she's getting all washy and sweaty, then you may want to look elsewhere. And then I'm not going to go through each individual horse, but the number three horse, Go Bears Go, is a horse that I've been watching run over in Newmarket and the Curragh and Ascot, you know, really since Derby weekend. And they're putting blinkers on him for the first time. Here's a horse that has run against the very best in Europe. He's run against Castle Star and Ebro River and Native Trail, and has competed, you know, tooth and nail against those horses. And I think it's a horse that at 15-1 with Johnny Velasquez is a horse that you have to be focused on and thinking about. Twilight's Gleaming, another Wesley Ward horse, I think has a really good shot. And finally, not to sound redundant, but another Wesley Ward filly in Averly Jane, who has just been improving race by race. And we actually ran against her. And I can't even say we ran against her in the Indian Summer. We were in the race with her in Indian Summer. And she just blew away a field of nine fillies like it was nobody's business. So she is definitely peaking at the right time. So to give you an idea of who I like, it's actually a couple of Euros. It's in no particular order, Go Bears Go, Twilight Gleaming, and then the local horse, Avery Jane.
Honestly, I this is a race that I generally pass on because it's such a scramble, especially at 5 furlongs. You know, that's such a mad dash to that turn. And, you know, if you don't have a good position going to that first turn, you're basically screwed. Even if you do, you can get shuffled out of there. It's, you know, you don't, I honestly don't want the speed. Like Averly Jane, I think is vulnerable as a favorite just because there's so much other speed in the race, but you also don't want to be too far back. There's a horse I do like that John didn't mention that I'm glad he didn't mention, and that's Hierarchy for Hugo Palmer and Ocean Murphy. He's very interesting to me because, you know, if you watch the last race in the Mill Reef, he dwelt at the start and he rushed to the lead after that. And he fought all the way to the finish. He just ended up getting beaten ahead by Wings of War. Other thing I like about him is he ran 4 times between August 9th and September 18th. So that's like less than 6 weeks. He's now been given a chance to freshen up and develop a little bit. It'll be a good price. He's got a very, very good jockey. And if he gets out of the gate, I think he's very interesting. He's 12-1 in the morning line. I think he could be able to sit that, like, you know, little mid-pack trip if the speed comes back a little bit. Could be able to get first run on the closers. But it's a total scramble. Like I said, 12 horses. Like I said, 4 also eligibles before. There's 2 also eligibles. So I'm interested in Hierarchy at a price. But otherwise, this is the kind of race I generally just pass on. It's kind of a little appetizer for the rest of the Breeders' Cup. John mentioned it's a grade 2. It'll be a grade 1 eventually. But it's just the kind of race where, you know, if God bless you if you have a strong opinion. But this is the race where I feel like it's hard to latch on to anybody. I'll throw a couple bucks on Hierarchy, but that's about it. Right. Up next is the $2 million Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, which somehow only drew 6 horses in the race. I don't know how much money they got to give away to get people to show up more than that. But 6 horses with Echo Zulu as a 4-5 morning line favorite to the outside. Bill Finley, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, Joe, you hit on it. I mean, that's as big a story as anything. Why are there only 6 horses in this race? And then when we get to a later 5 after a scratch in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mayor Sprint, which is dominated by John Green's favorite horse, Gmeen, in there. Well, the story obviously revolves around Echo Zulu, the 6 horse, 4-5 in the morning line off a blowout win in the Frisette. Last time out. But the subplot is what's going on with Ricardo Santana and Steve Asmussen. So Ricardo Santana is taken off this horse after a 2 straight grade 1 wins and replaced by Joel Rosario. However, Santana stayed on the other Asmussen horses throughout the Breeders' Cup. So the owners must have gone to Asmussen and said, we don't want this guy riding our horse. The reason why, entering today at Del Mar, he's lost 92 consecutive races. And then also, what about Steve Asmussen? Most of those mounts are for Steve Asmussen. Asmussen was 1-57 at Keeneland. And this is going to be their first Breeders' Cup starter. So, you know, is the negative mojo so strong with these Asmussen right now that you want to look twice at all his horses, particularly if Santana is riding them? She's the most likely winner. But my other thought about this is, you know, we're probably going to look throughout this Breeders' Cup, which chalks can we beat? And, you know, probably not Gmeen, probably not Jackie's Warrior. I think Echo Zulu is one of the ones that maybe you can make a case that she can be beaten. You know, first of all, from her buyer numbers, 2 straight 90s in the Frisette and Spinaway. I mean, that's really good, but it doesn't blow the field away. You have Hidden Connection last time out with an 87. You have Juju's Map with an 84. So if somebody else steps up and improves a little bit in here, I think they have the ability, and maybe from a speed figure standpoint, are good enough to beat Echo Zulu. The two obvious horses that if you want to try to beat her are Hidden Connection, which I mentioned before, Raylu Gutierrez getting his first ever Breeders' Cup mount for Brett Calhoun. Look at this filly on paper. And, you know, if Echo Zulu weren't in this race, you would say, wow, look at Hidden Connection. Breaks her maiden by 7.5, then went to the Pocahontas by 9.25. After dueling early with John Green's DJ Stables Lemieux in that race, Lemieux came back and won, by the way, last Saturday at Gulfstream Park in a Florida bred race there. And then Juju's Map for Brad Cox. You know, what's wrong with her? She wins the Alcibiades by 4.25 lengths. Before that, she breaks her maiden. You know, obviously, Brad Cox goes without saying what's going to happen. I think Echo Zulu from the outside post will get to the lead. Can they catch her late? This is one of the chalks on the Breeders' Cup card I'm going to try to beat here. And throughout the entire Breeders' Cup, keep an eye on Asmussen and Ricardo Santana, because this is just, it's the strangest story what's going on with these guys. But I think in this case with Echo Zulu, it is a plus that Santana's off the horse.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. That's interesting you brought that up, because, you know, it's rare to see a trainer go from as hot as Steve Asmussen was at Saratoga to as cold as he was at Keeneland that quickly. And it definitely is a subplot because he has so many top contenders. And I think it's especially with Jackie's Warrior. I think he's the most likely winner in the whole Breeders' Cup. But I'd be lying if I said, you know, how cold the Asmussen bar didn't give me a little bit of pause. In this race, I agree with Bill. You know, I think Echo Zulu is very vulnerable at 4-5. She's had a very easy time of it in all her races. The problem is it's such a short field that, like, you know, you can't latch on to any kind of price to beat her. You know, it's not exciting to try to beat a 4-5 favorite, to me at least, with a 5-2 shot or a 2-1 shot. That, to me, is the issue. I thought Juju's Map ran huge in the Alcibiades, because if you watch that race, other than her, that race collapsed behind her. She was the only one near the pace that was still going in the end. Obviously, Hidden Connection, we talked to Brett Calhoun after that race. She could not have been more impressive. And she was stretching out from 5.5 furlongs to 8.5 furlongs in that race, galloped out like a freight train after the race. So, yeah, I mean, I wish there was more to talk about. But, you know, with such a short field, it's just, what else can you say other than those three are the main contenders and we're slightly against Echo Zulu?
Yeah. And Joe, let me just jump in for one more thing. Hidden Connection, I mean, that was such a wow race. And you mentioned it going. I mean, she almost doubled the distance that she had to run. From her first to her second start. And having experience going two turns is a huge advantage in a race like this. And there's a reason why, since 2015, a favorite hasn't won this race. And primarily it's because you get a lot of false favorites that, you know, win impressively going 5, 6, even 7 furlongs, never go around two turns, don't have the experience. And then all of a sudden they get on the main stage and have to go that far. And it is a grind. I mean, it's a marathon for these two-year-old fillies. So I think if there is a vulnerable filly, a vulnerable favorite in the day, it's going to be Echo Zulu.
Yeah, agreed.
An Arizona bred. There's an Arizona bred in this race. How awesome is that?
Don is always on that. He's always on the obscurely state bred horses in the races. Echo Zulu is vulnerable, but how can you get excited about 2-1 or 5-2? You want to try to beat her in the horizontal wagers? I guess that's the way to go. Next up is the Juvenile Fillies Turf, going 1 mile, obviously on the turf for Juvenile Fillies. That's why they pay me the big bucks to figure that part out. This is a race that Chad Brown has really dominated. He's won it 5 times. He won it 3 years in a row between 2016 and 2018. Last two winners, Sharing for Graham Motion and Aunt Pearl for Brad Cox. It's interesting. It's other than Sharing and Rushing Fall, last couple of winters, like, we've had Aunt Pearl hasn't really gone on to do anything as a three-year-old. Newspaper Record, you know, she eventually came back around, but, you know, kind of got off to a slow start as a three-year-old. That's something to watch for whoever wins this race going forward, if they can carry it forward to their three-year-old season. Another big full field. We've got 14 horses, no also eligibles. Yeah, you know, it's hard to really latch on to anybody in this race. To me, there are no real standouts to my eye. You know, I thought Haughty's debut that she got kind of ridiculously DQ'd out of was very impressive. And I like the confidence in Chad Brown. He brought her back at Keeneland and she won again. She got her diploma for the second time, basically. And he's bringing her back in just 19 days after that race. You know, Chad Brown is generally kind of a new school trainer, likes to give his horses a lot of time between races. But I like that he's bringing her back on relatively short rest. Koala Princess has had two very good trips, but has been visually impressive both times for Christophe Clément. I got to throw a couple bucks as a punch bet on Pizza Bianca. And I thought, you know, I think she's a big contender anyway for Bobby Flay and Christophe Clément. She won first out at Saratoga. And I like to see those horses really step forward second time out, especially if they're stepping up in class. And she ran a very, very good second in the Natalma behind Charlie Appleby's Wild Beauty, notably does not show up in this race. Probably would have been a pretty short price if she did. So I think she's very interesting, gets the rail draw. I wish Joel Rosario had stuck with her instead of opting off to go to Koala Princess, but obviously major detriment having Jose Ortiz ride your horse. Couple others I wanted to mention. And as far as the Euros, I think Malavath is interesting toward the outside. Now, she's only been 6 furlongs. She's got to stretch out to a mile, but she's had this steady forward progression. She won a group two against males last time at Shanty. So I think that of the Euros, she's kind of the most interesting horse. And California Angel was one of my biggest regrets of the year in terms I didn't bet her last time. Didn't even know she was in the race. Wasn't really paying attention that day at Keeneland. I'm sorry. Keeneland, I'm paying attention every day. Wasn't paying attention from a wagering standpoint that day. So I don't want them to get confused because obviously I'm always paying attention as a racing fan. But yeah, I thought she was crazy impressive in her debut. Go back and watch her debut win at Kentucky Downs if you haven't seen it. She breaks dead last, several lengths last, makes this huge sustained wide run all the way around that sweeping turn and still blows her opponents away in the stretch. She was super, super impressive. And I thought actually ran a pretty good race on the dirt after that. You know, George Leonard is a very, very interesting story. He's a guy who's been training for a long time. This is the first like real big horse he's had. I believe it's his first Breeders' Cup starter. Only a $5,500 OBS June purchase earlier this year. He wanted to get a race in her in that dirt race. She flagged back a little bit early and then closed late to get third. Honestly, I thought that her race in the Jessamine was the least impressive race of all three that she's run. And she still won. She still was able to get up late at 17-1, unfortunately, without my money. But she's a very nice, interesting story. You got to love those smaller connections and the smaller purchase prices who were able to knock heads with the Godolphins and the, you know, the Bobby Flays of the world. Like I said, I don't think that there's a standout. If you guys see one, then you're a better handicapper than me. A little bit interested in Pizza Bianca, a little bit interested in Malavath, and a little bit interested in Haughty as well. Any thoughts from John or Bill?
This is going to repeat myself throughout this, but this looks like a race where trips, it's who's going to get the trip. And you have that many horses in there, 14, you know, the winner is going to have to run a good race, but there's going to be some luck involved in this as well. So, you kind of gave a good overview, Joe, and said that it was, among 6 or 7 horses, I would totally agree with that. No way to predict who's going to get the trip, but that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, and the feel-good story of the race is California Angel, and it's too bad that she got parked out, you know, in the left field, you know, for this race in the 14 hole. But, you know, she doesn't have to make the lead. Obviously, she comes from way, way out of it, so it's not as detrimental to her. But, you know, you're talking about a small outfit, that owns it, a lesser-known trainer that trains it, but it still has a very good, you know, win percentage. And a modest purchase, for $5,500. I mean, Joe, you're bidding $600,000 on horses, and you talk about missing something. It wasn't the Keeneland race; it was not being at the sale, buying this horse for $6,000. That was the big thing. You could have been a contender, kid. But it would have been nice to see, if the horse got a little bit of a better post. Not that, again, it's going to kill her, but to me, that would have been a fun thing, as if she was kind of in the mix in the middle of the field and had a little bit of a chance to save some ground. But I think, Joe, you're spot on. This race is wide open. And quite frankly, that's why I didn't pick it to be the lead on the story, because I wouldn't have known, how to handicap this one.
Yeah. Another, just one more interesting tidbit about this race is that the Euros have only won it twice. If you look at the juvenile turf, they won it a lot more often. They've only won the juvenile fillies turf twice in 13 runnings. And honestly, I don't see any major European contenders in this race. Like I said, Malavath is a little bit interesting. Other than that, I'm not a big fan of the Euros here. I'm going to go with the home team in the juvenile fillies turf. Next up is the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. $2 million for two-year-old colts and geldings going a mile and a 16th. Big favorite at the rail, Jack Christopher, 9-5. This was a race that really got, Bill's going to touch on, I'm sure, but really got affected by the draw, I think, more so than any other race. Because the two favorites, Jack Christopher drew the rail, Corniche drew the outside. Let's toss it over to Bill Finley.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Joe. That's a big plus for Jack Christopher. Not so much that the rail is the very best post position, though it is a good one, but that his major rival, Corniche, drew on the outside 12-horse field. For Corniche, that means Mike Smith is really going to have to send this horse out of the gate, or else he's going to risk losing a lot of ground going into the first turn. So I think that's going to make it just too tough for Corniche to beat Jack Christopher. And I'm not sure it's so much a two-horse race, but Jack Christopher, I'm a big fan, and I don't see how you can't be. This horse has looked really, really good. He came out and broke his maiden by 8 3/4 at Saratoga, romped in the Champaign. I think the win was easier than the 2 3/4 length margin suggests. Again, I think the one post will work out really well for him. He can stay on the inside. He can stalk. And it look, you know, a lot can go wrong here, but not only do I think this horse is going to win and be one of the chalk winners on the Breeders' Cup, if this horse stays healthy, I can see him doing some really special things throughout his career. It's interesting that he only cost $135,000 when you look at how much some of these horses in this race cost. You don't think of Chad Brown as being the guy that has the hot two-year-old, the guy that has the horse perhaps going into the 2022 as the heavy favorite for the Kentucky Derby. But, you know, Chad Brown is just good. He's good with turf horses. He's good with dirt horses. He's certainly going to be able to get the very best out of this horse. A couple other notes on other horses. Interesting, Jasper the Great. I looked up that race and found it on the TDN website, by the way. The race in Japan, where the horse by Arrowgate broke his maiden by 10 lengths. I don't know what to tell you about that. I don't know on earth who the horse beat in there, or the time for a mile and eighth, 1:54.3. It's actually very slow, but again, I have no idea what the track condition was like. And the story of the Japanese coming in this year, which John touched upon earlier, is a big one. But they have had very little success in the Breeders' Cup. And this trainer, I guess it's Hideki Mori, who's bringing in most of the horses for Japanese, has had 8 starts in his life in the U.S., has never even had a horse hit the board. So he's 0-8, no seconds, no thirds. Couple other horses to mention in here. Pinehurst is really being overlooked. I don't like him, but this is a horse that won the Del Mar Futurity, a grade one for Bob Baffert, and is 8-1 in the morning line. I think part of it is he didn't get a very good figure in the Del Mar Futurity, a 79 in there. Also, it's a little odd that I think Baffert decided not to run this horse after the Del Mar Futurity, so he doesn't have any races longer than 7 furlongs and hasn't proven himself going longer. And I think the other Baffert in here, Barossa, is actually a pretty sneaky horse in here. Buy Into Mischief, $775,000 Keeneland purchase. This is a horse that does not really follow the Baffert pattern. First time out, you couldn't find the horse. Well, if it's 6-1, was beaten 20 lengths, but has improved in each of the last two starts. Last time out, getting an 87 buyer to win a maiden race at Santa Anita. That kind of puts the horse in the equation a little bit. But I'm going to go on all chalk here. I would be very surprised if Jack Christopher got beaten.
I'm totally with you on that. Didn't you write about in your weekend review about how he could be the next dirt or the first dirt superstar for Chad?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And he's very interesting. He's bred a little bit more to sprint. So I think that'll be interesting going forward to see if he can stretch out. But yeah, also because I don't think there's a ton of speed in this race. I think he's going to kind of be able to work out that trip. If there was a ton of speed and he drew the rail, then that's a kind of a different thing. Could be a little disadvantageous. Just a couple of thoughts on this race. I was a little disappointed that Major General and Rattle and Roll both didn't show up. Thought those could have been some major contenders. But I think as long as is Jack Christopher breaks okay, he's going to get a good trip under Jose Ortiz. I'm on record as saying that I wasn't that impressed with Corniche's American Pharaoh. Obviously, he won, but I thought it was much less impressive than his debut. And, you know, he can improve off that, but coming from the 12-hole, I got to see it, and I got to see it. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to rely on him as at a short price. I think if you got a single in the late pick four or the pick five, it will be Jack Christopher. Command performance, I think, has a big chance. You know, I think you could see the champagne 1-2 once again, one way or the other. Just one horse I wanted to mention that I'm trying to get in the number at a price is American Sanctuary, 30-1 morning line for Chris Davis. This is a horse that's kind of steadily progressed. I thought ran very well in the sapling. I thought was one of those horses that, you know, kind of was screwed a little bit by the jockey not having the whip. I thought he pulled himself up. And then, you know, there's a race that he should have won that he gave up a little bit late. And then the Breeders' Futurity, I thought he ran a much better race than the figure would indicate on paper. He had to weave through traffic from the back of the pack. Gets a big, big jockey upgrade in my mind to Florent Giroux. He has shown speed in the past. He was only two lengths off of one timer who was in the juvenile turf sprint in his debut. So I'm hoping that Florent Giroux can get a little bit more speed out of him, get a little bit more of a stalking forward trip. Don't think he's good enough to win, but in a race where otherwise it looks pretty chalky, I'm going to try to get American Sanctuary in the number. So closing out the action on Friday's card, the fifth of five Breeders' Cup races, goes off at 8:30 Eastern time, 5:30 Pacific, is the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. This goes a mile on the Del Mar turf. It's another full field. A little bit more Euro participation in this than the Juvenile Fillies turf, and the Euros have historically done better in this race than in the Philly race. John Green, I'm going to toss it to you.
Yeah, and I've been working backwards personally from this race since May, watching horses in Europe, watching horses here in the States, trying to handicap and figure out who's going to be, you know, one of the 14. And it is a very, very deep field. It's not just a lot of horses in the race, but there's a lot of contenders in this race. So settle back, because we're going to go through a couple of them right now.
You should have to recuse yourself from this race.
I purposely picked it only because I have been watching all these horses. So if there's ever a race that actually I have a modicum of insight, you know, just I'm ahead of you just a little bit, it's going to be on this race. The other ones, you guys can lap me as far as
first time for everything, John. First time for everything.
Yeah, exactly. And you're probably wondering, why does John care so much about this race? Well, we bred a horse that's in this race. Credibility is number 12, Nyquist out of our mare Class Edge, who's a 30-1 with Mike Smith, but Credibility is in there for Mark Cassie. And then, is there another horse in here that maybe Green would be interested in? Let's see, the 13 Coinage. Yes, Coinage, who we've been, you know, hopefully getting ready for this race, you know, since he won the With Anticipation, the Grade 3 at Saratoga. And it's nice to know that this race is so interesting to Bill Finley.
I didn't know we were allowed to do that while John was talking.
I guess it was the seventh inning stretch. I missed it.
Yeah, right. Sorry about that, folks.
Bill, you need to hang on every single syllable of what I'm going to tell you about this race. We're only on horse number one. I have 14 more to go. So get ready. If you have to pee again in the next 5 minutes, I understand, because you're old, but try to hold it together, man. All right. Anyway. So we have Coinage, who's the 13 in here, and hopefully we'll also not get concerned about how far out he is into the parking lot after the first turn. A lot of contenders in this race. A couple of Euros I wanted to point out. Modern Games, who's coming in from Newmarket for Charlie Appleby, and if there's a trainer, an international trainer, that's had a better year here in the States than Charlie Appleby, I don't know who it is, because it seems like every single horse that he's bringing over is winning. He's at a 44% win percentage. Think about that, 44% win percentage bringing horses here to the States. And this will be Modern Games' first race here. He ran a 12 minus on the sheets, and because there's no buyer numbers to talk about, a 12 minus is good enough to win this race if he replicates that. And the fact that he's in the one hole shouldn't bother him that much, because quite frankly, every single race that he's had has been on a straightaway, save one. So he's just going to go straight and then, follow the crowd and make the left-hand turn. The other Charlie Appleby horse in here is Albahar. And again, we were up close and personal watching him run in the summer. That was a monumental effort. Coming here over a transatlantic flight, came to the North America. I was going to say the States, but technically it was Woodbine. Came to Toronto and hopped at the start, gave everyone like a 3 or 4 length head start, and then said, easy breezy, I got this, and kind of meandered through traffic and won that race very, very impressively. And to me, that was a signature win for Albahar, the number two horse. Dakota Gold, New York bred, got to mention that. Aside from Coinage, there's another New York bred in here of Danny Gargan's. I'm wondering, though, with him, if the Lasix really helped him last time, because now he's not going to be able to run on Lasix. So I know he ran a big number in the now. It's just a question of, is he going to be able to replicate that out in California? Tis the Bomb in the Bourbon. Again, another signature win because he broke through the gate. And Joe, I remember you talked about this in the recap. Very rarely do horses break through the gate and still get a chance to run in the race. He broke through the gate, passed the vets, and then pretty much almost lapped everybody from the 12 hole. That was a very, very impressive race for Kenny McPeak's, horse, Tis the Bomb. McKinnon owned and, by friend of the show, Eric Johnson. So, and obviously he named that horse after his line mate and friend, McKinnon from the Colorado Avalanche.
Nathan, for those of us who actually watch hockey, Nathan is his first name.
Nathan, what did I say?
You didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. I didn't say anything. Sorry. Excuse me. All right, Nathan. Bing bong. Oh, that's the Knicks. Never mind. And then at the tail end of the race, you have Portfolio Company, who was $125,000 Kitten's Joy. And out of a Wild Again mare, which you don't see ever. You don't see Wild Again mare still producing foals. And that horse is owned by Klarovich and trained by Chad Brown. And then Grafton Street, who was a royally bred Warfront out of a Galileo mare, who again ran a very, very solid race, first time on the turf at Woodbine. And then because they couldn't get a turf race, maiden turf race to go, in time for this horse, Mark Cassie decided to put him on the synthetic. And the horse, ran a very good race to win that race, had enough points. So all they needed to do was just graduate and win the race. But, guys, we haven't even gotten to the favorite, the 14 horse, at a modest 4-1 favorite. But, there are so many horses in here that can jump up and win this race. It wouldn't be a shocker to me if any of those, I think I mentioned half the field, if any of those seven or eight horses ended up standing in the winner's circle.
Yeah, and obviously, best of luck to John and the Coinage connection. So we have a rooting interest in this race. But yeah, just John touched on most of the field. Just wanted to mention a couple horses too. Slipstream, I think, is kind of interesting for Christophe Clément. He's a horse that is bred to sprint, but Christophe Clément could have run him with a fees paid berth in the juvenile turf sprint and decided, no, this horse needs to go two turns. I would defer to Clément on things like that. I thought that was very interesting because they had to pay to get into this race. And then Grafton Street, who John mentioned, how about the fact that he ran third with a 34 buyer, first time out, 5 furlongs at Belmont, and Mark Cassie had the confidence to try him in the Summer Stakes off a 4-month layoff off just that one race. That to me says a lot about what he thinks about Grafton Street. And he ran well in the summer and then came back and broke his maiden, as John said, next time out. And Dakota Gold, I'm very interested in. New York bred, shout out to the New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund, new sponsor. We talked about how there's going to be a couple of New York breds that factor this weekend. I think he's one of them. I disagree with John on the Lasix thing just because he also ran very well in his debut without Lasix at Saratoga. And he's bred to go long turf. And in his debut was in a 5.5 furlong off turf race and still blew them away, showed a lot of speed last time, relaxed nicely off the pace, ended up running away with that race. So those are the three I'm most interested in: Dakota Gold, Grafton Street, and Slipstream. And of course, for the home team, Coinage. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland Sales is represented by 53 horses in the Breeders' Cup. There's one race, I can't remember which one it was, but every single horse in the race is a Keeneland grad. You can see that in the TDN entries with the little Keeneland horse that signifies that. Through 2020, Keeneland Sales have produced 117 horses that have won 126 Breeders' Cup races, including last year's Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile and this year's classic favorite, Nick's Go. We'll get to him in a little bit. Keeneland November sale starts 1 week from today with book one on November 10th, and it runs through November 19th. 11 additions were recently made to the Horses of Racing Age portion of the auction on the final day of the sale. including Crowded Trade, who we know is a three-year-old son of More Than Ready, who was second in the Gotham earlier this year and third in the Wood Memorial in the Amsterdam. Very nice, interesting three-year-old horse who I think can take a step forward as a four-year-old for sure. And also last week, it was announced that Grade 1 winner Paris Lights, who won the Coaching Club American Oaks last year, four-year-old daughter of Curlin, has been supplemented to Book 1 as a racing or broodmare prospect. So I think she's going to be very, very popular as a daughter of Curlin, who's already a Grade 1 winner. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
The November sale is a destination event for buyers and sellers around the world.
The ambiance during the September sale was incredible.
As we move into Keeneland November, I think people will find a new experience, a new atmosphere, new optimism. Anybody who participates, buying and selling, when they participate in Keeneland, they're reinvesting in the industry. That is the mission. It allows us to build for the future, and the future is bright.
The future is bright at Keeneland November.
Maximum Security proves he's the real deal with a gate-to-wire win in the Florida Derby.
Champion three-year-old.
Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
11 triple-digit buyers.
Maximum Security, he smoked them in the cigar mile.
Grade 1 winning four-year-old.
Maximum Security takes them all the way in the TVG Pacific Classic.
Secure your mare's future. Maximum Security.
TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Coolmore will be represented by several future stallion hopefuls in the Breeders' Cup, including Golden Powell, who we'll get to in a second. He's the morning line favorite for the Breeders' Cup Turf Spring, looking for his second consecutive Breeders' Cup win. And Jack Christopher, who we talked about at length in the Juvenile, also a morning line favorite. Think he looks very, very tough, as Bill and I mentioned. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Munnings and how his stud fee has increased from $40,000 all the way up to $85,000. Sunday, he had an exacta in the Grade 3 Bold Roller at Belmont with Wonder Where Craig Is, getting his fourth win this year. And Continuation, there's another son of Munnings coming in second. And a few hours earlier on Sunday, his daughter Money for Row won the Ontario Damsel Stakes at Woodbine. I know John's plugged into the Woodbine racing. And on Saturday, another daughter in Sharp Star won the Empire Distaff Stakes. She was very impressive. She was a horse who got good last year, had a couple of slow starts this year, and really came back strong in the Empire Distaff. Looked great. Won at 16-1. It was a big overlay, I thought. And Cupid continued his hot streak this weekend with debut winner Sassy Emma, as well as The Sky Is Falling. You've got her second straight stakes win in the Eleanor Casey Memorial Stakes. And he's represented by Desert Dawn in the Juvenile Fillies this weekend. So Cupid coming on strong at the end of his first crop year. So if six horses wasn't a short enough field for you, we start off Saturday with the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint, going 7 furlongs. With a whopping 5 horses lining up for $1 million. This makes a little more sense, at least, because I think people are scared of Gamine, but still, can we get somebody to show up for $1 million in an American Grade 1 race at the Breeders' Cup? Guess not. But this is the Gamine race, as John dubbed it. John, take it away.
You know, Joe, when you're down to 5 horses and you have, you know, Gamine as the lead, and Bella Sophia and CC is also very, you know, very low odds. It's going to be very chalky. How chalky is it? It's more chalky than a billiards tournament. How chalky is it? It's more chalky than an elementary school playground. Bill, how chalky is it?
John, how long did you work on that, by the way, to come up with that?
It's more chalky than a multiple homicide crime scene.
Wow. Got dark.
You always end up with the third one. That's comedy. The third one is always the key. Now's the time for you to walk out, Bill. There you go. All right. Listen, I've been touting Gamine, you know, since almost her first win, and she's a very, you know, favorite of mine to watch because she's just poetry in motion, as far as I'm concerned. And say what you want, and we've all said a lot of things about Baffert trained horses, and this filly has, you know, a negative test, but she just wins. She wins and she runs as hard as she has to. And are her numbers as good as last year? No. You know, is the field as good as last year? No. Is it as deep as last year? No. She's a defending champ. And, you know, so the easy thing to do is to pick the defending champ and say that she's going to win. But not so fast, my friend, because as much of a Gamine fan as I am, I think she may be vulnerable in this race.
Ooh!
Because I don't, what? Because she and Bella Sophia, I think, are going to go out, you know, tooth and nail for the first half mile and ding dong each other, or bing bong, as Joe likes to say,
bing each bong.
Other. bing bong all the way through the first half mile. Now, can Bella Sophia pin her to the pin Gamine to the rail and keep her, you know, down there and set aside? Maybe. Is that going to soften her up? I don't really know. But if it does, I don't think either one of them wins. I think CeCe comes kind of off it and can sweep by them as long as those two outside horses kind of go, you know, ding dong and around the racetrack. That's a perfect scenario to get Gamine beat. And just like the last Avengers movie, you know, where they say, do we have a chance? And he's like, you got one in 17 million chances of beating, you know, Thanos. Well, I think it's kind of the same thing. You got like one chance to beat the champ. And that's if Bella Sophia pins Gamine to the rail and makes her use all of her energy to go around the first half. Otherwise, I think it's Gamine's race to win.
I mean, that's, there's a couple of races like that this weekend. You know, if you want, we're going to talk about the classic, obviously, in a little bit. How hard do these horses go after each other early? They're main contenders with speed. It's not just cheap speed in the race. They're main contenders. So jockeys have to be really calculated with how much speed they use early, how much pressure they put on the other favorites. And I agree that Gamine hasn't been as good this year. Interestingly enough, she's never run at Del Mar. She's run at a bunch of other tracks. She's one of the other California tracks. She's never raced at Del Mar. Obviously, she's 9-for-10. She's a champion for a reason. I am slightly, maybe a little bit interested in Edgeway. I think she's kind of the now horse for John Sadler, has been working really well. And I think, you know, hopefully she can lay a little bit off the pace. Like you said, CeCe figures to get a good setup if the two favorites go after each other. But yeah, this is more of just a watch race, I think, to get the action started on Breeders' Cup Saturday. There's a reason they put it first of all the nine races. So I think John is going to be at the edge of his seat watching his girl, hopefully win her 10th race and 11 starts. But I think this is the first real test you're going to get of the Baffert scrutiny, extra scrutiny and extra tests and all that. You know, obviously we have Corniche on Friday, but he's got a wide post. Gamine is going to be, I think, the bellwether to see how Bob Baffert's run with all of this extra scrutiny. So that part is intriguing. But if from a betting standpoint, unless you want to throw a couple bucks like me on Edgeway, I don't know how you get excited about this race.
Joe, one thing I want to jump in here, and you guys have talked about this. Normally, I would love to bet against Gamine because she's not as good as she was last year. She just isn't as fast and hasn't been doing the things she did last year. But like you talked about, I believe it was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. If you beat this huge favorite, which is going to be hard to do, you're going to get a horse that's going to pay $8, something like that. Now, maybe your horse Edgeway would pay more than that, but I agree. I mean, I don't know how to find value in this race. So, you know, I'm with you. I'm sitting on the sidelines here.
Next up is the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint going 5 furlongs. This to me is the race that gets most affected by what track it's at. Because there's a big difference between 5 furlongs and 5.5 furlongs. And then, you know, sometimes at San Anita, they used to run at 6.5. I think that this is, you know, 5 furlongs is a very different thing. And it's going to be a mad dash, just like the Juvie Turf Sprint. Kind of why I don't like last year's winner, even though she ran very well last year in Glass Slippers. I just think 5 furlongs, a little bit too short for her. I do like the Euros in here. You know, I like Golden Pal as well. I think Golden Pal is a very impressive horse to watch, and I wouldn't be surprised if he wins this race. I just think he's going to be a little bit too short of a price for me in terms of relative to his figures compared to the rest of the field. He did get beaten 4¾ lengths in the Nunthorpe Stakes. I think the Euros, I do have a strong hand in here. I'm mainly interested in A Case of You, who I think is the kind of the now horse, the late developing three-year-old, has run really well in his last two races, kind of outrun his odds. He was second at 33-1 in the Flying Five Stakes at the Curra, and then last time won the Prix de Loubet at 10-1, getting up in the last stride to win by a nose. So I 8-1 morning line, I think that's good enough for me. Emirati Anna is interesting as well at 5-1, drawing more towards the rail. I prefer those horses to Glass Slippers. Otherwise, I mean, like I said, Golden Pal is legit. Extravagant Kid could get a little lost on the board. He won the Alquos earlier this year, was third in the King Stand. Couldn't really threaten Golden Pal last time, but maybe gets a little bit better of a better setup this time. Gear Jockey has gotten really good now that they've turned him back to sprinting. Also think 5 furlongs is a little bit too short for him. But for me, it's mainly the Euros and mainly A Case of You in this race. Just one other horse I wanted to mention, who I think is a little bit of a wild card, is Arrest Me Red, who's the other horse for Wesley Ward. This is a horse who's gotten, you know, kind of steadily better, at least in his turf races. And this year, his 2-for-2 beat Elders last time in the Belmont Turf Sprint race. So I think he's a little bit interesting, and I think he could sit that good, like just off the pace trip and get the first run on the closers. But 5 furlongs in general, I want someone with speed at least a little bit. I'm into a case of you. Any thoughts from you guys, John?
Yeah, and actually, the last horse you mentioned was the one that I wanted to mention, Arrest Me Red. I think that ever since he came over to the Wesley Ward Barn and they, they've been cutting him back to turf sprinting, he's been extraordinary and he's been getting better every single race. And you think on breeding, Pioneer the Nile out of a medallion mare, that they should be getting better as they're getting older. So as far as a 3-year-old running against older horses, yeah, that's tough. But only going 5 furlongs, I think it sets up really, really nicely for a horse like that. And at 12-1, again, with Johnny V on, I think that he's really got a great shot. The thing that interests me also in this race was two different things. One is there are four fillies and mares running in this race against the boys, which is, which is really, I think extraordinary. I mean, obviously there isn't a filly equivalent for this kind of race, so they're forced to run in this race, but 4 quality fillies and mares that are in here. And guys, we talk all the time about how, you have these expensive horses that are coming into big races and royally bred horses that are coming to big races. If I asked you how many horses in this race during their career ran for a claiming tag, would you say it was 0, 1, 2, 3, 4? How many do you think, just off the top of your head, that ran for a claiming price?
If you're asking the question, I feel like it's multiple horses. So I'm going to say 3.
Okay. Bill?
2.
Okay. Actually, if you add yours together, that's how many horses in this race ran in a claiming race. So there were 5 horses, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that actually could have been claimed, and 3 of them were. Claimed from other outfits that ended up developing and finding their place, sprinting on the turf and running in this race. One of which I just want to, again, a humble brag is Fast Boat, the 11 horse who's 12-1 of Joe Sharp's. We actually own the 2-year-old named Glider, who's going to make his career debut in a couple of weeks, turf sprinting. So we'll see if Glider can be like big brother Fast Boat and hopefully come to, to the Breeders' Cup turf down the road. But I just thought it was really interesting. This is the give me your tire, you're hungry, you're poor, you're yearning to be free kind of race, because you have a lot of horses that couldn't make it going long, couldn't make it on the dirt, couldn't make it, sprinting on the dirt. And now all of a sudden they're in a grade one after, being in claiming races, a couple of them being in claim races. And now on the highest stage for the most amount of money you can run for 5 furlongs on the turf.
Not to undercut your point, but I think most of the ones you're talking about are on the AE list. So
I didn't even include those. Honestly, I didn't even include those.
So who were the 3 who got claimed? I see Fast Boat.
So Charmaine's Nia ran for maiden 32,000 in her career debut at Woodbine and won. Fast Boat not only ran in a claiming race, but ran in 4 claiming races for as low as $15,000 at the Fairgrounds December of 18. And Extravagant Kid, the horse just at the outside, was claimed for $75,000 at Gulfstream.
All right. You got me. I was looking. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Look at that. Fast hands. Ninja-like. The kid's got the moves.
3 that got claimed. So technically, I feel like I got you.
Well, all right. Well, we'll give you... We'll give you a thread of blue hat.
I already got one of those. It's a little dingy.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
No, I mean, that is an interesting point. I think it's that kind of division that lends itself to horses that are eventually in for a claiming tag, or horses that are repurposed after, earlier in the career, maybe not working out on the dirt. And Fast Boat is a very nice horse. He is an overachiever, man. He seems to never get bet. He won the Troy 2 starts back at 10-1. 10 for 27 in his career. I think this race is a little bit too short for him, but he's a very, very nice horse. Next up is Bill's favorite race of the entire year. It is the Big Ass Fans Dirt Mile. Bill, take it away.
Well, how can you not love a race named the Big Ass Fans anything? Love it, love it, love it, love it. Back to the theory, the theme of a lot of this, chalk. Life is good, 4-5 in the morning line. I'm a fan. The last time out in the Kelso, that race was
a big ass fan.
The big ass fans, yes. Yes. Very good, Joe. That was good.
Great, Joe.
Last time on the Kelso, I mean, it was as ridiculous a race as you'd ever seen. Horse paid 210, a claimer ran second. So, you know, I'm not going to put too much stock in that race. Maybe the best start of this horse's career was the start before that, the Alan Jerkins, where he finished second, beating a neck to Jackie's Warrior. And I love this comment in the forum, Mike Smith aboard, overconfident handling. When do you ever see that? The other thing about him that I think is a little bit sneaky, he's going back to two turns in here for the 1 mile distance at Del Mar. In his entire career, he's only run around two turns once. And that was in the San Felipe back in March, where he won by 8 lengths, got a career best 107 buyer figure. As well as this horse has been running of late, I think you can make a case that he might actually improve in a two-turn race. So you got Pletcher Irod Ortiz off a horse that is just, you know, remember the way we were talking about this horse before he got hurt and was out of the Derby. You know, people just say, this is so impressive to him. This is the one. This could be a superstar. And, you know, he's done nothing to dispute that. I mean, the Alan Jerkins defeat is his one blemish on there. But as I said, that might have been his best race. So I'm not going to try to get too clever here. And I'm going to look at Life is Good at 4-5. Again, this is amazing that I've never seen a Breeders' Cup with so many chalks in there. And, you know, kind of from a handicapping standpoint, what are you going to do with this? The other horse that I really want to mention, and if Silver State were a little bit faster, I would give him a big chance in here. Now, I've already been on the bandwagon or the anti-bandwagon of Santana Asmussen, and we'll see how that plays out on Friday. But, you know, you have the coldest jockey in the country riding Silver State. That is a factor. But let's not forget, he won the Met Mile. And that is, you know, next to this, the most important 1 mile dirt race for males in the country. In the Whitney, a mile and eighth might have been a little bit too far, ran into a tremendous field led by Nixco and Maxfield. Then his race at Parks last time out was really good. The comment, poor start. He did come out of the gate awkwardly. That really cost him position early. He had to come from further behind than I think Santana wanted to come. So I think this horse is going to run very well. 7-2 in the morning line. And again, I'm not getting very creative because this looks like a very formful race to me. And even this race with only 8 horses, you know, you would think would have more. And then Ginobili, you know, what is going on with him? He's just another horse for most of his career. 2 starts ago at Del Mar, 1 mile on the dirt at Del Mar, wins by 9¾ lengths, gets a 104 buyer and comes back and wins the Pat O'Brien at 7 furlongs. Out of the middle of nowhere, another son of Munnings has gotten really good. But I'm not going to get too cute here. I'm not going to try to be that creative. I'm going to say Life is Good and wins this. And I hope he comes back next year. I think he probably will, because I think he could have a very, very exciting 4-year-old year.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see about that. But I agree that I only see 2 ways this race plays out. Life is Good wins by 10, 6, 7 lengths, or he gets fried on the lead and Silver State comes and picks them up. I mean, I agree with Bill. It's hard to get past those two. I love that. Notice that chart comment. It's always interesting when the chart callers decide to editorialize. It's overconfident handling. Like, how do you know that? Like, where, you know, maybe he knows the horse drifts out a lot and was trying to keep him straight. And that's why you didn't see him pumping and whipping all the way around the turn. But that's always very interesting to me. I always love when chart callers decide to inject themselves into the job.
But is that the reason why Mike Smith is no longer riding the horse?
Gotta be, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Perhaps. I honestly, other than letting Jackie's Warrior get inside of him, I don't know that he did anything wrong in that race.
No, exactly.
But also, I don't know, maybe Mike Smith had a prior commitment on the Kelso card day at Santa Anita and wasn't able to come for that race. But yeah, if he runs anything close to that Alan Jerkins race, he's gonna blow this field away. So I could not be more excited to announce the new sponsorship of the TDN Writers Room, XBTV. XBTV is one of the best resources. I'm not reading off copy here. This is real heartfelt, you know, lauding of our sponsor, because XBTV is one of the greatest resources you have as a horse player, as a racing fan. Their workout database is incredible. Honestly, especially during Saratoga, they have horses you don't even know about yet, and they're recording them and posting the workouts for weeks, sometimes months before they run. And it's such a great resource. So we're so excited to have them on. And so what we're going to do with XBTV going forward is going to have the, we're going to have the work of the week. We're going to show it as we're talking, as I'm blabbing in your face. This week, it is Medina Spirit, who on Friday at Santa Anita worked out 6 furlongs, went 111 and change. Obviously a very, very nice workhorse and one of the contenders in the classic for sure. So we're probably showing a bit of his work right now. And basically, especially for the Breeders' Cup, XBTV, they got the Breeders' Cup portal. So they have free access to exclusive videos in advance of the Breeders' Cup. So you can watch all the key contenders prepare for the race. In order to watch, just sign up for a free first racing, first bet account. And to sign up, go to xbtv.com/breeders-cup. So that's a great resource. And it really teaches you, I think, sometimes to watch workouts. You know, I'm not a guy who's seen a lot of horses work out in the morning. XBTV takes you there and you can get a sense of who's working better than who's working with who's more extended than other horses. So it's a very, very interesting, valuable resource for horse players, for racing fans of all time. And First Technology is XBTV, racing's premier online destination for video workouts, has unveiled the 2021 Breeders' Cup portal to provide handicappers, horsemen, and fans free access to exclusive videos in advance of the Breeders' Cup World Championships, November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, as racing's most comprehensive library of racing workouts, as I mentioned. XBTV will be on site at Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Belmont Park throughout the Breeders' Cup to ensure that viewers can watch as key contenders prepare for racing's most highly anticipated event. In addition, the XBTV team will interview top jockeys, trainers, and owners as they prepare their horses for Del Mar. And to visit XBTV's Breeders' Cup portal, visit xbtv.com/breeders-cup. In order to watch XBTV videos, a first account is required. First is the leading name in horse racing. In addition to XBTV's free video library, a First account gives customers access to online betting with First Bet and Express Bet. I'm currently an Express Bet member, as well as BetMix handicapping software. They got it all covered. So definitely check out that Breeders' Cup portal and welcome to XBTV to the show. Next up is the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. This is a race that kind of jumps around a little bit in terms of distance. It's usually 1 3/8. That's what it'll be this time. It's a very, very nice field. A lot of European participation. I'm going to toss it to John, but I got a lot to say. So I'm going to be doing my usual thing where I just wait for John to finish talking and then jump back in.
Yeah, it's really the Joe Bianca show. Bill and I are
for the course.
We're just here for eye candy, obviously. Yes, exactly. You know, Joe, you mentioned the Maker's Mark Breeders' Cup Fillies and Mare Turf race. It is a marathon. It's an 11 furlong marathon on the turf, which is why the Europeans have won the last 5 years running, because they're so used to having those kind of distances, you know, overseas, including last year. They've won 5 years in a row. But, you know, in going through the race, it is a deep race. There are a lot of fillies here that have not only won their respective divisions, but also beaten the men in their respective countries. You know, there are horses that have won going a mile to almost 2 full miles. None of the horses in the race were ever entered in a claiming race. So that there's something for that, just to keep the theme along. But in talking to TDN correspondent Al Carasso about some of these European horses and horses coming from overseas, he gave me an opportunity to kind of think about a couple of horses and watch some videos on some races. I landed on Love's Only You.
Mm-hmm.
Love's Only You, I think, is the class of the field. She ran a very respectable, second to Sodashi, who was the famous white filly over in Japan, lost by 3/4 of a length in a race where she lost her shoe. So she was running on 3 shoes and still only lost by 3/4 of a length in that grade two against the boys, no less. She's beaten the boys. She's run and won at this distance. You know, she's running as world-class horses, you know, in multiple different countries, including Almanai and Mischief and Chronogenesis. I mean, she is really in a field that is very deep. I think she is the class of the field. I was really pleased to see her coming over for this race. The other thing is, you know, she's by Sunday Silence out of a Stormcat mare. And that matchup.
By Deep Impact.
I'm sorry. By Deep Impact, who's a son of Sunday Silence. Thank you, Jeff. But you know, if you look genetically at that cross, especially for a female, there are so many blue hen mares that tie together. And not that we want to go into a genetics, you know, tutorial right now, but whenever you get strong female lines that come together and double up, and they produce a filly, supposedly, if you go by genetics, that's supposed to be a really strong cross. And obviously, you know, it's one of the reasons why I feel that Loves Only You is the standout in this race. And she's 4-1. She'll probably be a little bit lower than that in the race. But there are 4 or 5 other horses in here that are, you know, 4, 5, 6 to 1 that people can look at and bet on, including Love, who's also, you know, a filly coming in from overseas, who has won against the boys. And has, you know, really great sheet numbers again, you know, if you believe in that, and has also won at distances, you know, ranging to this level to 11 furlongs, and is owned by, you know, Coolmore, bred by Coolmore, a daughter of Galileo. And I think also is giving Aidan O'Brien his best chance to win this race, because he's never won this race before, which I was surprised to see. So for me, the race really, you know, should be called the romantic marathon, because there's so much love in the air.
Very good, Jeff.
It's interesting. Let me jump in. You went on with that race and very good insights for 4 or 5 minutes. Never even mentioned, and this is a reflection of how deep it is, the horse that won the race last year is back.
Warlike Goddess.
You know,
exactly.
Again,
yeah. Good yeah, point.
On the sheets has some very good numbers. And you can even make a case for Ocean Road, who, you know, who's coming over, a daughter of Australia, who ran at 11 on the sheets last time. And we didn't even mention My Sister Nat, who's a half to Sister Charlie and dances every dance and has made $800,000. I mean, this is a really deep, if you wanted to, this is a great betting race. This is a great, you know, visual race also. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that's, you know, we lamented the short prices and the short fields earlier. This is the Breeders' Cup. This is what you want in the Breeders' Cup. Japan, Europe, America, toe-to-toe, top-class fillies, Warlike Goddess, Love, Love's Only You, like you said, last year's winner, Audaria. There is a lot to dig into in this race, but John covered it very well. Just going to say that this is one of the races I'm looking forward to the most of the entire weekend. I think it's going to be a terrific, terrific, you know, renewal. And I am a little bit against Love, Warlike Goddess at a short price. She's not gonna be super short, but I just think the waters get so much deeper for her. She's very, very impressive to watch, one of the most visually impressive horses that's in training right now. But yeah, I think the Japanese have a very, very good chances in this race with Love's Only You. I like her a lot, and it'll be interesting to see how Love runs. She was a horse that, you know, last year won 3 group ones by a combined 18 1/4 lengths. This year, she's been very good as well. Maybe not quite as brilliant, but has won the Prince of Wales Stakes, which is a major group one against males. And I think that she's rounding back into her top form. So yeah, so much to like, so much to be interested in this race. Next up is the $2 million Breeders' Cup Sprint, going 6 furlongs. I'm going to be quick on this race just because, you know, it's Jackie's Warrior and everybody else for me. Like Bill was talking about earlier, you know, the only subplot, the only maybe potential caveat I would have in singling Jackie's Warrior is the fact that Steve Asmussen's barn has gotten so cold. But just look at the race and tell me who you think can beat him. You know, Dr. Scheibel's had a very nice year. He's won 5 races in a row. He's obviously a very nice horse for Mark Klatt. Special Reserve has gotten pretty good for Mike Maker. He won the Phoenix last time out. Following C, it was nice to see him run so well in the Vosburg. It was a horse I thought highly of earlier this year. But come on. Jackie's Warrior lays over this field. I think 6-5. If I could lock in 6-5, the morning line price, I would do it. I don't bet chalk, but I think he's going to be more like 3-5 in this race. It's going to be a deserving favorite. expect him to pop out of there and just run these horses off their feet. So it's what he's been doing all year long since they turned him back to a sprint. So best of luck to a friend of the show, Kirk Robinson and Judy Robinson in that race. He's going to be champion sprinter, I think, no matter what. He very, very much deserves it. But yeah, for me, it's just Jackie's Warrior and everybody else. Unless you guys got something clever, I think we can move on.
Let's move on.
Yeah. No, and he's undefeated as the number two horse in the program. He's 3-for-3.
Wow.
And never ran in a claiming race.
John's tidbits are just getting more obscure as the show goes on.
We're running out of time.
Where can we go from here? So starting the last pick four of Breeders' Cup weekend is the FanDuel Breeders' Cup Mile. Obviously a mile on the turf, full field, couple of also eligibles. Bill Finley, it's all yours.
A lot like we said about the Philly and Mayor turf. I mean, what a great betting race in here. You know, really, really wide open. You got Euros coming in. You got the best of American horses, et cetera. And you've got a full field of 14 going in this race. Part of me wants to just say Space Blues. This is a horse trained by Appleby, Charlie Appleby. We've talked about the kind of year he's had in the U.S. He also has Master of the Seas, by the way. Horse doesn't look nearly as good as Space Blues. Coming off a Group 1 win last time out in France. Granted, that was on heavy going. So I don't know how the horse, if that moved the horse up, but is won on firm as well. So that's not going to be a problem. To me, you know, this is a kind of race you would think the Europeans would probably win. They ran 1, 2, 3 in it last year. Aidan O'Brien horses. It was Aidan O'Brien. So to me, he's definitely the one to beat. But having said that, and he's not going to be a heavy favorite, he is 3-1 in the morning line. Do you really want, from a betting standpoint, do you really want to take a 3-1 shot or a favorite in a race where, you know, anything can absolutely happen in here? So I'm kind of talking about two different kind of theories. So if you're playing the pick four, I think you do one of two things, either single Space Blues or you go 7 or 8 deep in here. And it's not really getting much buzz. And I think it's a little bit unfair, is Mo Forza. This horse has been really good this year. Peter Miller turned this horse around at the beginning of August back in 2020. Horse has won 4 straight since then. Doesn't blow anybody out, but certainly is a horse that is in great form, very consistent. And they also have the angle. This is the horse's 3rd start off a long layoff, so that should definitely help. Then you even have horses like In Love, What's Wrong With This Horse, won the Keeneland Turf Mile last time out. And Hit the Road, a horse who ran 3rd last time out in the City of Hope behind Mo Forza, had a tough trip. And can we throw out Aidan O'Brien, number 9, Mother Earth? I don't think so. So this is a race where a lot of things can happen. And then I'm so used to betting on New York racing that every time I see a horse that's loose on the lead in a turf race, I think, oh, they're going to go to the half in 53 and nobody's going to catch him. That's a blowout for Chad Brown. So I think that, you know, this is a very good betting race, a very wide open race. I think I will pick Space Blues on top, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if you have a $400 exact out in this race.
Totally. I am actually with Bill completely on this race. I think blowout is interesting because there is not a lot of speed on paper. Space Blues is 10-for-18. It's very interesting that Charlie Appleby has not tried him at a mile or further since his first 3 races. Like, look at 6, 6.5, 7. 6 3/4 furlongs. You don't see too many of those. He ran on the Saudi Cup undercard earlier this year, going 6 3/4 furlongs. There's plenty of big mile races in Europe for him. So I think that I noticed that he hadn't tried him at a mile. He's got to stretch out a little bit, but he's obviously the horse to beat. I agree with Bill. Mo Forza, I think, is America's best hope in here. He's just the kind of horse who always comes with that big run and seems to get up. Third start off the layoff. Generally, I don't think is that big of an angle, but in this case, had such a long layoff. And you know that Peter Miller had this race in mind when he brought him back. So I think he's kind of slowly cranked him to where he can, you know, maybe tangle with a horse like Space Blues. But yeah, very, very interesting. But those would be the main 3 for me. Mo Forza, Space Blues, and Blowout. John?
And how about we're 4 or 5 minutes into this race and we haven't even talked about God Stormy. You know, the filly who maybe has seen her better days, but still has to be respected, earning $2.4 million. And the only race she ever, you know, ran at Del Mar, she won on that turf. She likes a firmer turf course. You know, we're not even talking about her at 10-1. And I think the long shot of the day, if you wanted to bet a long shot in a long shot type race, is Ivar, the 14. where you're sitting there, and you know, he ran in the Breeders' Cup mile last year, lost by 2 lengths to Order of Australia. And then they gave him time off until May of this year, ran, during the Oaks Derby weekend and lost by 2 lengths in the Turf Classic, the grade one, and then had 5 months off after that and ran a tune-up race at Keeneland in the grade one and lost by 2 lengths in that race and got bumped and had all kinds of trouble. So, you know, do I think Ivar from the 14 hole is a great bet? No, but I really feel like that this race in particular is setting up where I think Bill said it's going to be a $400 exacta. I mean, the try could be, you know, $4,000, depending on who actually comes in, because I really feel like that, you know, at 8 furlongs, you're going to have 3 horses that hit the wire first, second and third. And if it was a mile and 16th, it may be 3 different horses that would have, you know, galloped out past that. So to me, this is another great betting, another great watching race.
So we're going to go a little bit out of order just for this one race, because I think we want to talk about the Distaff and the Classic together. Those are the two, I think, most important races in terms of deciding championships. So we're going to do the Turf here, then go to break, and then come back and finish up with the Distaff and the Classic. Breeders' Cup Turf is a mile and a half, $4 million purse. Very, very, very nice field. I think, you know, in terms of American horses, the all-American based horses, the only horse you want is domestic spending. Maybe Gaffoe could get into the number. He does have a good late kick. But overall, I think this is all the Euros and then domestic spending. Start with domestic spending. He is a very, very nice horse. And, you know, other than he's got 6 wins and 8 starts and a second and a third, and he just has this huge, huge late punch. He showed it in the Hollywood Derby last year, closing in 33.87 for his last 3 furlongs. That's really moving. Did it again in 34 and change, the dead heat for the win in the Turf Classic at Churchill. If you watch the Manhattan, he was just absolutely devastating in the Manhattan. You know, he was just lagging back. And then when Flavien Prat said go, he exploded, ran by Trivivan like he was standing still. Trivivan obviously came back and won the United Nations next out. Last time in the Mr. D Stakes, it was just a funkily run race, you know, with that long shot popping out to the front and you know, like Bill mentioned earlier, slowing it down to New York style glacial turf fractions, 52-4 for the half mile. Just couldn't quite get by that horse late, but it's just so hard to chase down that lone speed when they're loose on the lead like that in the stretch. Only question with him is, does he want to go a mile and a half? Never been further than a mile and a quarter. So I think that that's something that the Euros have on him. And, you know, Tarnawa she is just such a superstar, like a star filly who just dances every dance, always shows up, always runs her race. She's been out of the money only twice in 17 career starts. She's got 9 wins, 4 seconds. She's obviously the defending champ. Unleashed this huge, huge closing kick to get up and beat Magical last year on the turf. Thought she was one of the most impressive winners on the entire Breeders' Cup weekend last year. This year, she came back, had an easy Group 3 win first out, and then was a good second to St. Mark's Basilica and the Irish champion. St. Mark's Basilica, who was actually retired a little bit earlier this month, is going to stand for 65,000 euros. Super, super nice horse. No disgrace being second to that horse. And then ran a very good second in the Arc as well. I mean, yeah, anytime you're a filly or a mare and you're able to be beaten just 3/4 of a length in the Arc, it's a very big accomplishment. And she just, like I said, she shows up every time. She's won multiple group ones, multiple distances. She's proven at a mile and a half. I will say she drew the 13 hole. That might be a bit of an impediment. They start the race just before the clubhouse turn at Del Mar, going a mile and a half, first of 3 turns. But she's a late runner, so I think, you know, if she were a speed horse, I would be more worried about the post. Those two seem like the main two horses, but I think there are some other Euros who are interesting in here. How about Sisfahan, the French bred, who's been running in Germany for his last 4 starts, late developing 3-year-old, has gotten steadily better this year, was second to Torquemada Tasso, 2 back in the Prix Von Baden at Baden-Baden and Baden-Baden. Sorry, I don't want to Americanize it too much, but second to Torquemada Tasso, who came back and had that Arc win at, you know, 50+1. And the German horses, I mentioned this when we talked about the Arc, the German horses have really stepped up in big spots. Torquemada Tasso last year in Swoop was second in the Arc. This is a horse that I think is getting really good at the right time. I would prefer if this was, you know, a Churchill or a Keeneland and had a little bit more give in the ground. Not sure how much the German horses are going to like that really, really firm Del Mar turf. But I think he's interesting at a price. Broom as well is not really, you know, you don't think of him as one of the top class Euros, but has held his own, you know, in slightly lower company. He did win a group one earlier this year in the Prix de St. Cloud. He was second beaten a nose in the group one Tattersall's Gold Cup, ran a good second in the Prix Foy two starts back. And then Walton Street as well. You know, Walton Street, again, a horse who was not necessarily the cream of the crop in Europe, but came to the North America and blew away his competition in the Canadian National International, got a 110 buyer, only 8-1 on the morning line. That tells you how deep this field is. Of course, coming off a 110 buyer and a 5 3/4 length grade one win is 8-1. I think it's mostly the Euros and domestic spending. I really, really like Tarnawa's horse. I love to see her win. Don't really want her at 9-5. Mainly interested in Sisfahan, but another very, very good, very competitive race that I think the Europeans kind of have a stranglehold on. Any thoughts, guys?
You know, Joe, you mentioned Broom, and the only thing that I would add to it, you know, he's a son of Australia, and Australia is quietly becoming one of the, you know, really solid sires over in Europe, son of Galileo. But Broom has run twice going left-handed turns. And he has won both those races going left-handed turned. Could just be a coincidence because it's a very small sample. But the fact that one of the races was going 1.25 miles, the other was going 1.5 miles, which, you know, what distance does that also replicate? I'll give you a second. It's this race. I think that Broom is very sneaky and is going to be sitting there, I think, 20-25-1, and is one that's going to complement, I think, should complement a lot of tickets.
And it's got Frankie. Frankie, never a bad thing to have in Breeders' Cup turf races. And I just the other thing I wanted to say is that it seems to me like there's going to be a fast pace here. And I think there just has to be, because if you look at Tribivon, Acclimate, Walton Street are all right next to each other, especially Tribivon and Acclimate, who really do all of their running on the lead. They're right next to each other. I think it's going to be an unintentional rabbit situation where you're going to have two, maybe three horses, you know, drawing off by 7, 8, 10 lengths early in the race, really going to set it up for the closers. But man, am I excited to see this race, especially Tarnawa. It's going to be great. The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Lane's End. You saw how popular the Lane's End Name the Colt contest was. Now we're introducing, we have the Lane's End Stallion of the Week. We've spotlighted Honor Code with that contest. And now this week we're spotlighting Connect, who's got Hidden Connection. We talked about in Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Very, very interesting filly. She's, like I said, Hidden Connection. Also the sire of Rattle and Roll, who we're not going to see in the juvenile, but I think is a very, very nice two-year-old and is, you know, going to be a very interesting three-year-old going forward. And Connect actually is the second leading sire behind only Gunrunner, with 23 winners and a grade one winner in his first crop. Now, John's got some stuff to say about Connect, but I just also wanted to mention Lane's End is doing this custom surfboard fundraiser thing where they're designing with a couple of ad agencies 24 handcrafted surfboards individually designed to highlight the entire Lane's End roster of world-class stallions, and they're going to auction them off with 100% of the proceeds going to the permanently disabled jockeys fund. And you know that Bill Farish and everybody at Lane's End has a very philanthropic heart and a philanthropic bent over there. So that's a very, very interesting, nice fundraiser that I think a lot of people are going to be interested in. So definitely get involved in that. And you can learn more at lanesend.com/auction. And back to Connect, who I think been a little bit under the radar, but Hidden Connection has got the flag flying this weekend and this Friday. And like I said, 23 winners, which is a huge number for a first crop sire. John, what do you think?
23 winners is really impressive. And the thing that I think is even more impressive is on the horizon, which is the fact that he's a son of Curlin. And you know, you would think that the Curlins would develop stronger as they get older, which is what I'm expecting with the Connect. So the fact that he's got early horses is really impressive, but you know they're going to continue to get better as they go further into turns and they continue to develop. The other thing is, from a genetic standpoint, you know, Connect is out of a Holy Bull mare. And the reason why that's important is there is this history of Holy Bull mare lines that do well for sires. One is Cairo Prince. One is Caravaggio, who is, you know, setting the world on fire in Europe with all the turf sprints. And then, of course, Munnings. So, you know, the history is there where you get a great son of Curlin out of a holy bull mare. And those genetics work, and they work turf, dirt, short, long, here, Europe, you know, and it's just Connect, I think, is a shooting star and working his way up from a quote unquote value stallion to a very commercial stallion.
Yeah, I remember him having a lot of really impressive sales results early on. There was a lot of buzz about him at the sales. I think that's only going to continue with the way his runners continue to produce and continue to get better. And I think John makes a good point about being a son of Curlin. You'd expect him to get better as three-year-olds, four-year-olds going along for as well. So we'll be right back after this message from Lane's End.
Connect, the next in line to carry on Lane's End's tried and true stallion tradition. A grade one winning millionaire son of Curlin. Physically impressive and dominant on the track. Winner of the Grade 1 Cigar Mile and the Grade 2 Pennsylvania Derby, where he defeated Gunrunner, Nyquist, and Exaggerator. With multiple six-figure yearlings in his first crop, up to $360,000. Connect. A proven winner on the track. A proven stallion in the making.
Now more than ever, it's time to get with the program because New York Breds start with an advantage. New York Breds run for Serious Green at Belmont in Saratoga. New York Bred Maidens run for up to $75,000 and allowance horses for up to $85,000. And Serious New York Bred owners can collect awards of up to $20,000 per horse per race in open company. So get back with the program. Seriously.
The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by the New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund. Saturday was a big, big day for the New York Breds at Belmont. We always enjoy those Empire Showcase days. You know, it's a great day for a lot of horses who can normally compete on the grade one, grade two level, who get their own day to clash with each other and showcase how great the New York Bred program has become. And the star of the day, by far, you know, if we had a weekend recap, we didn't have time for it because it's such a busy show, was American Revolution in the Empire Classic. You know, this is a horse that I've liked a lot throughout the year and won by 11 and three quarter lengths with a 108 buyer. He was a big favorite in that race, but I think even exceeded expectations. It's a late developing three-year-old son of Constitution for Todd Pletcher. Man, was he impressive. Bill talked about him in his weekend review. What were your takeaways, Bill?
Joe, I was completely on board with everything you said. You could look at it and say, okay, well, he just won a New York Bred race. But it wasn't like that. He so dominated the competition. You've got to think that, wow, this is not just a New York Bred type horse. A horse is going to win New York Bred races. This is a grade one type horse. And remember, in the prior start, he ran third in the Pennsylvania Derby, albeit beaten six and three quarter lengths or something like that. So you have a very well-bred horse by Constitution, trained by Todd Pletcher, who's getting really, really good and better with every single start. He's on to bigger and better things. And yeah, I mean, he was a star on Saturday, and I think he's going to be a bigger star going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the whole point is that, you know, restricted races, when they're for New York Breds, you see a lot of horses that can hang in grade one and grade two company. And he is definitely one of those horses. Just a couple other horses I wanted to mention from Saturday. New York Traffic was another horse who was second in the Haskell last year, competed at grade one company, won the Hudson handicap very, very impressively. 2-year-old Venti Valentine, who I thought was really nice in the Maid of the Mist Stakes. Chipsational had a good battle and won the Sleepy Hollow. Sharp Star, who we mentioned before in the Empire Distaff handicap. The Important One, who's kind of reinvented himself as a dirt sprinter, trained by Steve Asmussen, won the Iroquois Stakes. And then we mentioned there's New York Breds in the Breeders' Cup. Coinage and Dakota Gold in the Juvenile Turf. And Dairy Nane and Run Curtis Run are both going to run in the Juvenile Turf Sprint. I think they all have a big shot. And, you know, we like I said, that's the home team for me. I'm a New York Bred myself, and I've been very proud to see the New York Bred program, you know, grow and develop into what it is now. And it's a big, big credit to the New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund. So we'll be rooting for those New York Breds this weekend in the Breeders' Cup. So these are the big two, the big kahunas of Breeders' Cup weekend, or the Distaff and the Classic. There's a lot to say about both races. We're going to start with the Distaff. It'll be interesting to see how this race is run. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, races like the Philly Mare Sprint, where Gamine and Bella Sofia kind of have similar running styles. You're kind of waiting to see who's going to put pressure on who and how much pressure, how the race is going to be ridden by the jockeys. I think this is kind of the same way in the Distaff, because Latrusco is the favorite, is a deserving favorite. I think she's vulnerable, but I think she's vulnerable with the contingency that other jockeys actually put some pressure on her. And there is another suite on paper. You got Private Mission at the rail. You've got Horologist just to her outside. Even She Dares the Devil has some speed and could keep her honest. You know, as much as I love Latrusca, and she has been great, she's had an unbelievable year. She runs all the time. She did a great training job at Fausto Gutierrez. We talked about, you know, we talked at length after the Spinster about how great she is to watch. To me, she's the most vulnerable favorite of the entire weekend. Most vulnerable short price favorite, I'll say. It's 8-5 in the morning line. Wouldn't be surprised to see her a tick or two below that by the time the gates spring. I just think figure-wise and potentially pace-wise, she is not a standout on paper in this race. And I'm going to toss it to you guys, because I think there's a lot to talk about in this race. But the horse who I really like, and the horse who I'll be betting in this race, is Royal Flag. And it's not just because Lane's End came on as a sponsor recently. I very much like the progression of Royal Flag. She was a horse who was very nice early in her career and has, you know, never been out of the trifecta. 6 wins, 3 seconds, 3/3 from 12 starts. But I thought she kind of hit a little bit of a snag midway through her four-year-old season. I just kind of expected her to move forward a little bit more. Didn't quite do that. This year, she's done that. She's run four times. She was second in the double dog there. And then she unleashed, I think, one of the most impressive closing kicks you'll see on dirt this year. And the Shoe V came flying out of nowhere to win that race. Was third in the personal ends until Latrusca. You know, obviously, she's got to make up that half length. But I thought last time in the Belle Dame, that was her best race to date. She was able to lay close enough to the pace and really just ran away with that race. I think she's drawing inside. I think she's going to get a good trip. She's got to be able to lay close just in case the pace doesn't materialize. But to me, she is the now horse. She is the horse that has gotten really, really good at the right time. You know, obviously Malathot has been very impressive this year, but I think is going to be a little bit of an underlay as people go out reaching for a second choice if they're against Latrusca. I'm into Royal Flag, but a very interesting race from a betting and a fan standpoint to me. What do you guys think? Let's start with Bill.
Yeah, I'm a lot higher on Latrusca than apparently you are, Joe. I mean, obviously she's not a cinch in this race at 8-5 in the morning line, but I think she will win here. You know why? Because she's Latrusca. Because she just gets it done. She shows up. And, you know, a horse like this gets overshadowed by the males, but she's a real star. She really is. And the campaign that she's had is so admirable, the way they've taken her around to all these tracks. She shows up. She does her job every single time out. I do know what you're saying about the potential of a pace problem for her in here. But I, especially because Horologist breaking right outside of her, and Horologist in the last three races has gone right to the lead. And a matter of fact, the connections have decided that's the way she wants to be ridden. So I can't see them taking her back. But I also think Latrusca, she doesn't strike me as the type of horse that is unrateable or is not going to win if she doesn't get the lead. She's got Irad Ortiz, one of the best jockeys in the country, aboard here. And I think he's going to be able to figure it out no matter what happens. I think the real story of the race, though, is that this is definitely the toughest race of her career, because now the three-year-olds enter the mix. And figure-wise, they're not as fast as she is. But in Private Mission, Malathot and Clarier, you have 3 3-year-olds that will be facing her for the first time that are all really good horses. I mean, they're all grade one caliber horses and have had a great year. And She Dares the Devil. There's nothing wrong with her. Matter of fact, she's the only horse to beat Latrusca this year. And she's in really good form now for Brad Cox. But I am confident Latrusca will win this. And then between the time of this race and the time of the Classic, we can have a Horse of the Year discussion. She has to win this race, obviously, Horse of the Year. And then she has to hope that both Nick's Go and Essential Quality lose the Classic. And then I think she can be Horse of the Year, but there's a lot of ifs there in her way.
Yeah, I really thought I was going to come on the show and scoop everybody by saying that Latrusca, you know, is a beatable favorite. There's so much early speed in the race. This is I think my personal opinion, this is the deepest race of the day, where six of the 11 entries have made $1 million and Horologis is at 950. So call it seven of the 11 entries in this race are $1 million earners. And there's so much contentious speed. You guys mentioned all that. The other thing is Latruska, even though her buyer numbers don't necessarily show a significant change, ranging from like 99 to 103 in the past six races, which is a very narrow range. Her sheet numbers show that every other race she takes a step back. So she ran a 5 in the Azari when she ran second. Then she kind of bounced to an 8. Then she ran a 6 in the Ogden Phipps. Then she bounced to an 8. Then she ran an 8- in the personal ensign, got a little better. And then the spinster, she ran a 6. It basically shows a pattern that just about every other race that she has to, whenever she matches her career best, she bounces a little bit, which most horses do. So when you look at the fact that she ran a 6 in the spinster last time out, even though she won in a hand ride, could be that she, is setting up for a bounce. Now, she's also got a ship all the way across country, which even though she's run at a bunch of different races, for the most part, they've been on the East Coast or at least, central time. So it's not really a big ask. Now she's got to go 3 time zones across the country to run on a track that she's never run before and in possibly arguably the deepest field that she's ever run against. So to me, I'm looking for reasons for her to get beat. Okay. I'm trying to find reasons, not that I want her to get beat, don't get me wrong, but I'm looking for reasons as a handicapper to say, okay, why should I bet against the horse that's going to be the favorite in the race? There's a list of reasons why, that we've all kind of mentioned. And, I hope for racing's sake, Latruska wins and then has a chance to be horse of the year. But I really feel like there are other horses. Joe, you mentioned Royal Flag, who's a horse that I like as well. I really like Malathat, who was $1 million-plus yearling at Keeneland September. And, is 6-for-7, 6 wins and 7 starts and 1 second by a head. And she's coming off a lifetime best of a 6 on the sheets, but she hasn't run in, it'll be 11 weeks between the Alabama win and this race, which is more than enough time to get a horse kind of reset and ready to put in a career best as well. The other horse that we haven't mentioned is As Time Goes By, who's based in California, again, is really well-bred, a daughter of American Pharoah. And if you look back at her numbers, back early on in the year, she ran back-to-back 5s on the sheet, which would win this race if she kind of came back to it. Now, she put in a couple of clunkers when she came back between May and August, where her numbers were not good. But her last race in the Zenyatta was an 8, and I think she's trending to the positive. So she's going to need to run back to that 5 to win this race. But she's got it in her back pocket where as an early 4-year-old, she has done it not once, but twice.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned the Ragazin numbers. I have the Thoroughgraph numbers in front of me, and it does not say that about Latruska. It says that she's run basically the same figure all year. However, those numbers are not better than the rest of the field. If you look at the sheets, the Thoroughgraph sheets for Latruska, she's basically run a 1, between a 1 and a 1.5. She's run a couple of 0s. In Thoroughgraph land and Ragazin land, the lower the number, the better. But between 0 and a 1.5 this year for all of Latruska's races. Let's look at some of the other contenders. Who I didn't even really mention is Clairiere, who ran a 1.25 last time and winning the Cotillion. Overcame a slow pace, wide trip. She could be getting good at the right time. Royal Flag ran a -1.5 in the Beldame, which is the best last out figure in the entire race. Malathat ran 2s in the Alabama and the Kentucky Oaks. Horologist ran a 1, 2 races back. She Dares the Devil at Del Mar and the Clement Hirsch ran a -1.25. Even As Time Goes By, as John's mentioning, ran a 0, ran a quarter, half, quarter, all earlier this year. Latruska, as admirable as she is just not a standout on paper. And at what's going to be probably 6-to-5 or 7-to-5, I think she's the most vulnerable favorite in the entire weekend. Maybe I'll look like an idiot and she'll just pop out of there and dust everybody. But I just think at that price, you got to bet against the winning because of who she is thing. I just don't think that that's a good way to approach betting this card, that you know, she's Latruska. She's won all these races. Therefore, she's going to win. I think on paper, there's a lot of reasons to be against her. As a fan, like John says, would love to see her win. Would love to see her win Horse of the Year. I think Fausto Gutierrez deserves it. I think she deserves it in terms of the campaign that she's run. But from a betting standpoint, it's a much more interesting race than just Latruska and everybody else. So we have reached at long last the big one, the $6 million Longines Breeders' Cup Classic. And it is a good one this year. Like I've said in the past, there are some years where you got to kind of artificially hype yourself up for the Classic. You know, you're supposed to be excited because it's a $6 million race. And it's just nobody in the older horse division that really gets you excited. No great three-year-olds that you really want to see. This year is not that case. This year you have the classic clash of three-year-olds against stellar older horses with Horse of the Year still up for grabs. That's all you want in a classic field. It is a terrific, terrific race. And I think it really centers around, I mean, first of all, we get more than nine horses for $6 million. Last thing I'll say about that. I think it really centers around the way the race shape sets up and whether or not there's going to be enough pressure on Nick Sko early to get him to back up going a mile and a quarter. I think they're just, you know, with Hot Rod Charlie and especially Medina Spirit, there just has to be enough pressure on Nick Sko that he's not going to see out the 10 furlongs. He's been absolutely great this year. Other than the Met Mile and the Saudi Cup, he's run, you know, just huge race after huge race. But I got to see it. I got to see him do it at 10 furlongs with big time speed in the race. And I think, you know, I kind of wish there was like I was looking at this race. I was thinking, I wish there was like a Uriah St. Louis, like type of deep. Because I would be all over that horse. You know, I just think it sets up for a bunch of horses to be getting a little leg weary late and just some absolute bomb to come pick them off. Alas, we don't have one of those horses for me to grab onto. So I landed on Max Player, Bill's favorite horse. And it's an interesting thing because Max Player has gotten good with him showing more speed. We talked about that he's, you know, his biggest races of his career have come when he's no longer a plotter. But I think he kind of needs to revert a little bit to that one run style if he's going to win this race. I'm a little nervous about the Asmussen Barn going cold, but I just think the race sets up for him and Essential Quality. Obviously, Essential Quality, I think, has that kind of one run style when he needs it that is going to play well in this race. But I think Max Player will probably be 3 to 4 times the price of Essential Quality. So that's why I'm most interested in Max Player. I think the pace is going to make the race here. I'm against Nick's go. I won't be surprised if he wins, but I just think at a short price with other speed in the race, 10 furlongs, I've said this for months now, you got to play against him. What do you guys think? Let's start with Bill.
Well, first of all, you know, I don't know how this all started, and John is to be blamed for it. I'm not really that big a fan of Max Player.
You should be, though. There's a sponsor now. Come on, Honor Code.
Oh, okay. Yes, I love his sire, though. I absolutely love the sire.
Right. Wasn't it because, wait, can we drop the part where Bill says, oh, and Max Player will be Horse of the Year? Patty, can you do that? Can you make sure you drop that here? That's why we've jumped on the Bill Finley Max Player bandwagon.
All right. Back to more germane matters here. This John Velasquez is going to decide this race. John Velasquez is riding Medina Spirit, who's breaking outside of Nick Sko. And he's got two. We know Nick Sko is going. I mean, they're not going to rate this horse after what he's accomplished and the way he's done things of late. We know he's going. He's the inside of Medina Spirit, who I don't think Art Collector and Hot Rod Charlie are going to be right on top of those two. I think they'll be a couple lengths back, maybe a length and a half, something like that. Velasquez is going to have a choice very early on in this race. Does he want to go after Nick's go? And if he does, Joe, your scenario is quite possibly, very likely could happen. They're just both are going to get beat and they're going to set this race up for someone else, be it Essential Quality or the great Max Player. If he doesn't go after Nick's go, Nick's go is going to win. If you let Nick's go get two in front in any kind of pace that is not ridiculously, ridiculously fast, he's going to win here. So I would like to know what John Velasquez is going to do here. He's going to completely dictate the race and see what happens. And Joe, you made some very good points about Nick's go being vulnerable at a mile and a quarter, but you know, the key to this race is the pace scenario. And I just really can't figure out what's going to happen here. I mean, all of us have seen races where there's five speed horses in there, and we think somebody's going to, the pace is just going to fall apart and nobody could possibly win this wire to wire. And the next thing you know, four jockeys are deciding they don't want to get in a speed duel and one horse is out there by two lengths early. We've seen it happen a lot of times. I also agree with everything you said. A very, very good race. Very entertaining way to end Breeders' Cup a Saturday with just some terrific horses and a battle for horse of the air. And how about Brad Cox? Imagine Brad Cox is going to likely or could very possibly win this race and cost someone in his stable horse of the year. He's got the leading two candidates in Essential Quality and Nick's Go. And of course, only one can win here. So it's a nice problem to have, but Brad Cox's embarrassment of riches continues to be on display.
You know, we're looking at this race. It's the last, it's the grand finale in a 14 race Breeders' Cup schedule that has a lot of interest and a lot of intrigue. And Bill, like you mentioned, there's going to be a ton of money that's going to pass back and forth, not just in the wagering, but in the, you know, in the breeding values going forward. You know, TaylorMade just secured the breeding rights to Nick's Go. So obviously, you know, there's a Kentucky farm there that's hoping. We mentioned sponsor Lane's End that's really hoping that that Max Player, you know, does well for their horse Honor Code. And it's just it is astonishing to me the amount of money that goes back and forth in this 2-minute race. But what's going to happen in this 2-minute race? You know, Bill, you mentioned it's up to Johnny Velasquez. I really think it's more up to Rosario. I think that if Nick's Go, who is a perfect 7-for-7 going around two turns under the care of Brad Cox, he is not good, Nick's Go, when he's headed at half a mile. So if there's an over-under of is Nick's Go going to win, I think you're going to know at the half mile poll if Rosario is in front, even if it's, you know, half a length or a length, and they go in, you know, 47 or slower, 47 seconds or slower. I think it doesn't matter if it was a mile, mile and a quarter, you know, 3-mile race. Nick's Go is going to continue to just churn out the time. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that there's enough speed in this race between, you know, Hot Rod Charlie and Medina Spirit and even Art Collector, if you want to include him in there, where somebody's going to push the pace. Somebody's going to go up there and try to take on the champ and knock them down a peg. And if that happens, then I really think that the race sets up perfectly for Essential Quality. And yawn, that's boring. But you know what? The horse has done nothing wrong. And the horses have been improving his numbers and improving his sheet numbers, whatever, you know, variables you want to look at as far as or measurables you want to look at. He's been improving as a 3-year-old. And he's had a very hard campaign. So they gave him 10 weeks off between the Travers and this race. And I think that's going to give him a world of good because it's going to give him a chance to relax and develop and grow a little bit. And he can sit off the speed. He can absolutely sit off the speed and then make a big run. And he's not a grinder plotter like, you know, like other horses in other races. I really feel like the race sets up beautifully for Essential Quality. He wins the race. He becomes 3-year-old of the year and he becomes horse of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of the theme of Essential Quality and why we like him so much is that he's so versatile, is that he can adapt to different pace scenarios. We've seen him drop back and make one run. We've seen him stalk. We haven't seen him go to the lead yet, but we've seen him up on the pace. And I think that that would be a fitting way for him to win this race and to win Horse of the Year because of those admirable traits that he can adapt to whatever's put in front of him. Just maybe a little bit of express train. Maybe he's the closest thing to a Uriah St. Louis horse in this race. Probably too slow, but if we get a total meltdown, I think he's the one that's going to be coming late. I haven't really talked about Hot Rod Charlie that much, but you know, 111 Buyer last out in the Pennsylvania Derby. You know, other than Nick's Go's Cornhusker win, that's the biggest figure in the race. I mean, Nick's Go tied him in the Whitney, but Nick's Go's Cornhusker is the only bigger figure in the race. I don't know, man. He ran, like we've talked about this, but he ran, I think, the most impressive losing race of the year in the Belmont. And he's obviously not going to want to go that fast because he's going to have to go head to head with Nick's Go if that's the case. But maybe he can just sit a little bit off Medina Spirit and Nick's Go and get the first run on the closers. he's not going to be any kind of price, but I just feel like he's getting forgotten a little bit with all the talk about the Horse of the Year candidates in here, rightfully so. But man, it's going to be a phenomenal weekend of racing, and it could not close with a more intriguing race. 8:40 p.m. Eastern, 5:40 p.m. Pacific time is the post time for the Classic. We can't wait. We can't wait to watch it all and to break it all down next week on next week's show. Thank you guys for all your insight. And we did it. We got through all 14 races. And we pass out. Hey. Well done, folks.
Only four bathroom breaks.
It's good for you guys. That's good.
Yes, it is.
The TDN Writers Room was brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining our West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. A couple West Point notes. West Point will be represented in the Juvenile Fillies by Sequist, who was a big late-running third in the Alcibiades, trained by Dallas Stewart, and also juvenile contender Giant Game for Dale Romans on Future Stars Friday. Big day for West Point, so best of luck to all the partners. And Ultra Impressive Flight Line, who we're always keeping eyes out for, is pointing for the Malibu, worked on Sunday, going 3 furlongs and 37-4. Very, very excited to see him next. Definitely something to look forward to after the Breeders' Cup. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're thrilled to welcome back to the program live from Del Mar. We appreciate him joining us. Wesley Ward, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, as always.
Great to have you. So obviously a big, big, busy week for you. I'll start with the big horse, I think, Golden Pal in the Turf Sprint. He's looking for his second consecutive Breeders' Cup win. He had to take a little bit of time off, you know, from his two-year-old year to his three-year-old year. How do you feel he's coming into this race relative to last year's Breeders' Cup?
I'll tell you, I'm really excited about him. He's coming off a nice win at Keeneland at his home track. Came out of the race fantastic. He's doing everything right now. Shipped out here great. Two workouts coming in at Keeneland on the grass course there were fantastic. So I couldn't ask for anything better.
Oh, Wesley, let's stay in the same race and give us your take on Arrest Me Red. Obviously, Golden Pal is the horse that most people are going to zero in on, but at 12-1 in the morning line, coming off a win in a grade three at Belmont last time out. This is a horse who obviously is in good form. What about his chances?
I think he's got a great chance. He's, since he came to me, started breezing him at Keeneland. He really didn't show much on the dirt. Kind of was getting outworked by subpar horses from him. And we got to Saratoga, and I worked him on the grass, which I was waiting to get him on the grass. And you could see where that talent is. And that's his surface. Put him in the stake at Saratoga with Johnny up, and he just kind of tracked him and went outside and went about his business and won like a really nice horse and did it in a very professional manner. Got him back to Kentucky, and our plan was to go to the Woodford from that race. But as it got closer, I spoke with the Jacksons and the Doug Coff, and I said, there's just no sense in putting both these two really nice horses together until we need to at the Breeders' Cup. And I told him about the race at Belmont, and they agreed. And we went there, and he had a really nice win. It's a really kind of a laid-back colt, but in the paddock, he showed that some antics that day. My assistant, Melanie, was there, and she's a French gal that goes over to Europe for me, and he was kind of rearing up and got a little hot and was a little difficult to have handle, and that's just never been him, never one day since I've trained him. When he got out into the post parade, I was noticing as I was watching on TV that he got hot. That's another, was kind of wild that he got hot like that. I've never seen him do that in his first race as well. So he got in the gate and he broke well and he shot to the lead and he won the race. And it was little bit uncontested. There wasn't a lot of speed in there, even though it was a sprint. But I think coming out here, we schooled him in the paddock yesterday, showed no antics, his real docile colt, just, you know, he's like a pony. So I think take that away and still winning, you know, and going into the Breeders' Cup and not having those antics that he had saddling, and also in the post-parade, if he can be nice and calm and cool and collected, which he is, I think that'll even enhance his chances even further. And I think that took away, even though he won, took away from his win in Belmont.
And Wesley, let's talk about the first Breeders' Cup race of the weekend, which you have three horses entered there, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. And you've never been shy about running fillies against boys, especially two-year-olds. And you have three fillies in this race. Can you walk us through the personality and what you expect of all three of these fillies?
They're all three different. Coffee Maker is probably the longest chance of the three, but she's very talented. From the onset, after her win, which she had a very nice win at Keeneland, wasn't ultra impressive, but it was a nice win on the dirt. And as soon as we switched her over to the grass, from that point, I tried to decide which one of the horses to bring that have won onto Ascot. And she showed to me like she was my favorite of all the horses I brought over this year to win. And I chose the most difficult race for her, being the Coventry 3/4 mile against the colts. And looking back now and knowing the filly that I know now and didn't know then, I think she does have distance limitations. And I think 5/8 mile is really ideal for her. And I chose the Coventry, which was 3/4, and 3/4 at Ascot is more like 7/8, especially for a 2-year-old. And it was just too far. Johnny broke. We had her in the right spot, just right there. And when the running started, she just kind of faded. And I think it's just looking back now, I think it's just a distance issue that she had. And she came forward, and the race got rained off the grass in Saratoga, which Averly Jane won. And we brought her to Kentucky Downs, and we ran her, but the race is 6.5. So, again, a little far for her. And she ran a credible third. She made the lead, turned it for home, looked like a winner. And until I looking back now, I think the distance kind of got her. And when I ran her against Averly Jane at Keeneland, I took the blinkers off, and she was a little green with the blinkers off for the first time, and still ran a very nice race where she had to come up the fence, and that's difficult for a 2-year-old. I think she learned a lot. She's came out here. She's settled in well, and I think she's going to run a really big race now, being 5/8 mile.
I just wanted you to put your jockey hat on for a second, because I think that these 5-furlong dashes is very – very hectic races where if you get pinched back, you basically the race is over for you at that point. You know, obviously your horses have different running styles going into these races, but if you were a jockey and you were on one of your horses, what would be your strategy, and how aggressive would you be coming out of the gate to try to not get that traffic trouble?
Well, you're always wanting to break well, you know. So, you know, just like you said, 5/8 mile with all those horses, you can get in trouble. And fortunately the other the filly that I have, Averly Jane, is just fast. You know, if she breaks the first jump, she's going to be out there, if on the lead or if not, just right there, head and head. And the other two, Twilight Gleaming in the race, she should be in a good position. She's very fast. She's very typey looking, sprinter type filly, to where she should just be sitting right behind them. And Coffee Maker, you know, the quickness that she has should put her in good position, but she will be muddled back there and she'll probably have to weave her way through again. So a lot of it is, you know, the trip when it comes to these races, if you're not in front. And if you're in front, a lot of it is how fast they go the first part of the race.
Oh, Wesley, this will be the first ever Breeders' Cup run completely without Lasix. And that's probably had something you've had to deal with more than any other trainer in the country, because your specialty is 2-year-olds and stakes races, which is where Lasix is not allowed. Take us through the year. What kind of challenges has it been? And it has been, you're winning a ton of races. It couldn't be that big a challenge. But, has this been a major factor or a major impediment for you this year? Or has it been something that you kind of handled easily?
Well, I think a big factor is running. You can't run the horses that often. If you do, they'll start getting some sort of ailments, as any athlete does, you know, whether it be a basketball player or a football player, you're athletes, so you're always having to deal with issues. When you're, especially with racehorses, and you're training every day and you're working, and you'll notice that not a lot of my higher tier or racehorses in general race that often. But when I do enter, you know, it is, you know, we're always scoping after the workouts and making sure that endoscopically everything is well with their airways. And if there is, then we'll have to back off, turn them out. So, you know, I think it's, you just can't get that many starts out of these horses anymore. And then that helps you with the bleeding.
Wesley, you've carved a niche in the turf races and obviously in the sprint races. What's your ultimate goal when you decide that you're going to retire as a trainer? Do you want to win a classic race? Do you want to win a Breeders' Cup Classic? Or are you very happy being known as the top turf sprint trainer in the country?
I'm glad I'm good at something. But there are other races than those that I'm racing in. But I'm fortunate that I have a good number of owners that are backing me with these type of horses. But obviously, I'd like to get into, you know, the different categories and different distances. You know, I had my first Derby starter this year, and eventually, because he won the prep at Keeneland, at Turfway, Jeff Ruby Stakes, he got in the Derby, but ultimately he was a grass horse, having won that on the Poly track. But it sure was a lot of fun getting over there, and I would like to get back and get back with a really good chance.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could do it. I have one question about your process with the 2-year-olds. You're a guy who's known for getting them out early and getting them on the track and in the winter circle early on. How early does that kind of scouting process start for you when you know which horses you want to bring out at the Keeneland meet and very early in the season? How early does that process start for you?
When I first started, it started right away. Like, I'd get them from the sales and I'd start breaking them, and I put a lot of miles underneath them until we started breezing them in late January. But anymore, I leave a lot of horses, including Averly Jane. She was left at Keeneland, and with the weather conditions, I really don't even start breezing them until March, 1st of March anymore, those types, and have to train around the weather. But you can see within the first work or two, and I think she only had about 3 or 4 total works in her life, even 8 miles. You could just see the quickness and how good she was. I focus a lot on the gate, and her first works are actually from the gate, only an 8 mile. But that instills a little speed into them, and then I can visually see which ones are going to be precocious and fast and quick. And it doesn't take a lot of training to get to 4.5 furlongs. It just mentally, they have to be there. And you know, what I'm teaching them from the gate is when they break and they're in front, you know, by the time they turn for home, it's within, 19, 20 seconds. And then, you know, the adrenaline alone takes them to the wire. So, as I'm getting older and I'm, you know, the years are going on, I'm learning a lot more that they really don't need all that workouts and early training to be on the forefront of the horses that I bring out early. They're the quick ones that they come out that anyone can visually see just by watching the workouts and analyzing.
Wesley, thank you so much for coming on with us. Really appreciate you making the time, and best of luck this weekend.
Thank you. I'm going to need it. It's a Breeders' Cup. It's always tough. You know that. So I appreciate you guys having me.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Wesley Ward will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from the Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse. every step of the way when it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses. We are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business can benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Legacy was well represented at the Facing October sale, where they sold 85% of their offerings, great clearance rate, and they're now busy preparing for the Facing Tipton and Keeneland November sales. And they had some important updates over the weekend. Barasa romped in an allowance at Del Mar. His stakes winning dam, Halo Dolly, sells as hit 471 at Keeneland November. And Lac Mikasa was a sharp second out maiden winner at Woodbine. He's the second foal out of graded placed mare Garavouche Colleen, who sells at hit 2111 at Keeneland November. So best of luck to Legacy. And like I said, after these two sales, I think you guys can take a little bit of a breath, hopefully. We would be remiss if we didn't mention this before we signed off. The racing world lost jockey Miguel Mina this week, which was a terrible, terrible tragedy. He was only 34 years old. He's my age. He died Sunday night when he was struck by a car on the highway in Kentucky. And, you know, he won over 2,000 races. He was a very, very prolific jockey, a native of Peru. But I think most people remember him as a very good guy. And he, you know, I think, you know, Brian DiNonato could speak to this because he rode Miguel Mina a lot. I think Al Stahl spoke about him and they were very close friends. And it was just really unfortunate for a good guy like that to die so young. And you know, I posted this on Twitter the other day. It kind of basically summed up who Miguel Mina was on the track. To me, was there was a race in 2017 where it was at Churchill, was some random race and on the turf, and there was a horse who stumbled, lost his jockey during the race, and he had that very dangerous situation where the horse's reins were like dangling in front of his legs, which is obviously a very treacherous thing where the horse can get his legs tangled and maybe trip and fall and break a leg. So I think in most cases, most jockeys would just try to stay the hell away from that horse. But if you watch the race, if you watch the head on, you can see Miguel Mina reach over, lean off of his mount, which is dangerous, to pick the horse's reins up and toss him back over his head so that the horse didn't trip and you know, injure himself based, you know, tripping over the reins. I mean, that's just something that I think only a small percentage of jockeys would do. And I think that sums up his character very, very well. And it's just a terrible tragedy. And we're sorry to Miguel Mina's family and to all of his friends. And there is a GoFundMe that's raising money for his wife and his two daughters, who he loved very dearly. And we can pop up that link at the bottom of the screen. So if you can donate to that, please do. Because he's got two young girls who are going to need some help going forward. So rest in peace, Miguel Mina. Terrible tragedy, and we're very sorry. Condolences to everybody who knew him and loved him. All right, so that's going to do it for the Breeders' Cup Preview Edition, third annual. Maybe we can do some Roman numerals. I. Third annual Breeders' Cup Preview Edition. Congratulations to you if you got through all of it. Thanks to John and Bill for all of their insight. It's a great, great weekend of racing. We're super, super excited about it. And we can't wait to break down all the implications. Sure, John and I will be tweeting during the Breeders' Cup, and Bill doesn't know how to use Twitter, but he's going to be texting the group chat about races during the time, and maybe we can relay his thoughts on Twitter. So yeah, I mean, it's
and Joe, I actually just got a letter from Bill commenting on his last year's picks. So he sent it regular mail. So it took 364 days. You may want to use the phone this time, Bill.
It was my horseback, I think.
Actually. Exactly. it says that he bet on Man of War in the race at Saratoga, the very first race he visited.
All right. That's enough Bill old bashing for now. But no, we really enjoyed doing this show, and it's obviously a tremendous weekend of racing. And we'll be back next week to recap it. Also, I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Wesley Ward, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Ali LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you all so much for watching. We will see you next week for a very, very big show.